You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the Arizona Diamondbacks. I am Allison Witter from MLB.com, and as usual, I am joined by my friend and colleague, Steve Gilbert, who covers the Diamondbacks for MLB.com. And Steve, I feel like we need to start with the catching situation, because I know that I have been a little skeptical of the Diamondbacks' plan behind the plate, and I did see recently that they signed Gerald Laird to a minor league deal, a very long career backup catcher. Normally, that transaction wouldn't really, you know, turn that many heads, but given the Diamondbacks' kind of uncertain situation behind the plate, he has a pretty legitimate chance, I would think, to make this team. What did you make of that when you heard the news that they had signed him?
Yeah, you know, Allison, I think they have Tuffy Goswich, and they have Oscar Hernandez, who they picked in the Rule 5 draft, who played in A-ball last year. And that was really pretty much all they have. That is all they have on the 40-man roster. And so what they've done is they've tried to put together some veterans as far as non-roster invitees. You know, Matt Pagnozzi's one, and now Gerald Laird's another. They've got Blake Lawley, who's a guy that's been in their system for a little while. Jordan Pacheco. So I think they're trying to give themselves a number of different options if they decide that, you know, Hernandez might not be ready for the big leagues, or I should say, if they're not able to acquire another catcher before opening day, because I still, like you, think that at some point they're maybe during the spring when the market for catchers sorts itself out a little bit or the price comes down for catchers, that they'll find themselves a catcher out there. But if not, I guess they feel like by having some veterans in camp like Gerald Laird, it gives them some additional options.
And this is a different situation. Like, a lot of times when teams release the names of their non-roster invites and they'll put out a release and there'll be, like, you know, 12 guys on there or whatever, and there's a lot of catchers. And there's a difference between catchers that they're really taking a look at that they really may need on the major league level. And there's also a group of catchers that are kind of like, they need it for spring training. There are obviously multiple pitchers that are throwing bullpens at the same time. So there's a lot of, like, bullpen catching type catchers that they need to have during spring training. And then some at the end will get released. Some will, of course, get dispersed to the minor league teams. But this is an entirely different situation where I think Laird was, like, the sixth non-roster catcher that they signed, but obviously has the best chance of the six. But you might want to keep your eye out for some other names in that group.
Yeah, you're right. They have six non-roster catchers, so eight total catchers in camp. So obviously, it's like you said, a lot of times they do have extra catchers because they need them for the drills and the bullpens and whatnot. But here, it seems like you have a legitimate chance of being able to make a team as opposed to maybe just being a filler somewhere else.
So we've had a couple of very respectable writers come out recently with like prospect lists and ranking farm systems and ranking the top 100 prospects, of course, MLB.com with Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. So they recently put out their 100 prospects, and I like reading Keith Law from ESPN. I think that he does a really good job of sort of ranking them. So first, starting with the MLB.com listing, so five Diamondbacks prospects in the top 100, which is the third most of any organization. So that's pretty encouraging. Of course, prospects are just that, prospects. We don't know how they're going to pan out of the major leagues, but people are pretty high on some of these prospects in the Diamondbacks system. Would you agree?
Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the things that encouraged the Diamondbacks is that two players that weren't eligible for the list because of the fact that because of the way they do the cutoff are the two Cuban free agents that they signed, Juan Lopez and Yasmani Tomas, two of who they consider their better prospects. So, in a sense, you know, you can almost look at it as they would have had seven if those guys had been eligible. So, certainly guys like Archie Bradley, Braden Shipley, Jake Lamb, Aaron Blair, and Tuki Toussaint, who made the list for them, are prospects that they feel very strongly about. And you can tell it's kind of slanted towards the pitching front, because that's something the organization has made a conscious effort of over the last year or so at trying to restock the pitching from some of the trades that they've made.
And you have to consider the Diamondbacks as sort of, I mean, I realize that they didn't feel like they needed to retool. They didn't need to rebuild or to start over or anything like that, because they felt like most of their problems last year were injury related. But they're also at a point where, yes, I mean, the farm system does need to be on the stronger side. Of course, that is pretty much applicable to every team. But really, they're in a place where they have like a relatively healthy $90 million payroll, but they do, they are going to need to infuse a lot of minor league talent, kind of moving forward. I would think that just having, nonstop funds available is probably not something that is really applies to them.
Right. And I think, with some of the trades that former GM Kevin Towers made in terms of trading away Tyler Skaggs. That would have been a scoop for you there if Patrick Corbin had traded. But trading Tyler Skaggs, trading Trevor Bauer, I mean, Ian Kennedy. I mean, there were a lot of trades where pitchers left the organization. So one of the things that Dave Stewart said when he took over was he wanted to kind of rebuild that. You saw that with, like, the Red Sox when they traded Wayne Miley for a pair of pitchers, Alan Watson and Ruby De La Rosa. They tried to get two pitchers back. They did that by trying to get getting Hellickson from Tampa. So they've tried to get pitching in just about every deal that they've done during this off season to kind of build up that inventory of young pitching.
So one of the things that we've talked about quite a bit over the off season since Tomas was signed, sort of like unofficially and then officially, was the fact that they're going to be looking at him at third base. And so I want to check in with you if there's an update on any progress with him. I know he's been working over there, and have there been any recent reports about how that's going?
You know, we got to meet him last week, and based on conversations with Chip Hale and with Dave Stewart, they seem to feel optimistic of how he's looked so far, but it's still just drills and not game action. So he probably still has a ways to go, but as of right now, they're still optimistic that he'll be able to play over at third base, which would be huge for them, because otherwise it kind of creates a logjam in the outfield if he has to move to left field. So the early returns, and I caution by saying they're very early, have been that, he's shown some good footwork over there, kind of learning the position, relearning the position, learning how to play it. They've shown positive signs so far.
Our friend Will Leach over at Sports on Earth, so our friend and colleague Will Leach, he had a really cool story recently, just kind of ranking, like taking every team and listing the top three rivals that each team has. And I found it fascinating because I really, didn't disagree with anything. And when I was reading through it, I thought, that's true. I can see that. And it's just funny because when it comes to the Diamondbacks, that are a young team, I mean, they've not been around that long. It's hard to really define what a rivalry is, and they don't really have geographical rivalries. So of course, the first one that Will listed was the Dodgers. It really only comes from the pool incident. Do you think that's a healthy way to create a rivalry? And what do you think would need to happen? As far as when would the Diamondbacks? For the people who are listening, it's the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Rockies is what Will listed, and. I don't know. I think the Cubs maybe because, there's just a lot of Cubs fans that are in Arizona. It's a very transient sort of fan base. But I don't know. What do you think would need to happen in order for the Diamondbacks to really establish a team that they hate for the right reasons?
Yeah, the Dodgers thing also earlier that season, that I guess going back even two seasons before that, they'd had a little bench-clearing incident with, and then they had a real melee with them in 2013 before the pool incident when all those guys got ejected and suspended. So it's kind of been with the Diamondbacks, as you point out, they don't have a long history. So it seems like their rivals have kind of changed. Like initially, they had a decent rivalry with San Francisco because, they kept alternating years of winning the West between, I believe it was 1999 and 2002 or 2003, where each team kind of took its turn winning the NL West. So that was somewhat of a rivalry. The Rockies were looked at as somewhat of a rival because they were the two youngest teams, newest teams in the NL West. But, yeah, I think for a rivalry to build, it takes time, and it takes having to battle them on a consistent basis for something, because geographically right now, I don't know that they really have a true rival. San Diego is the closest team, and I don't know that there's any you know, real rivalry there. So it would have to be another case where they were, where they get into a consistent back and forth with the team, kind of battling for the NL West title.
So you would think that even though they had that sort of rivalry with the Giants and both teams were good, you think that that's kind of dissipated? I mean, would you agree, like, that there would be more of a rivalry with the Rockies at this point than there would be? I mean, is there anything remaining from that Giants thing, or was it just because the Giants have gone on?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything more to the Giants thing. Again, it's hard when the Diamondbacks are not competitive because, you know, the Giants have won three of the last, you know, five World Series or whatever it is. So that's kind of dissipated. But, you know, the Dodger one is obviously a hot button for people in Arizona right now just because of the bad blood that was, you know, exists between the two organizations. I thought maybe there could be a rivalry in San Diego. You know, you had Kevin Towers here and you had Josh Burns over there. They kind of, you know, organizations kind of traded general manager, so to speak. But, you know, now Josh and KT have both moved on. So, yeah, right now it's hard to pick. If I had to pick one rival other than the Dodgers, I'm not sure who I would pick for them.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I just would like to see a day when the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers don't like each other because they're just both really good and they just duke it out. Not for any reason of people jumping to the pool, but I guess you can't really expect too much. Anyway, okay, Steve, thank you so much for your time, and we'll check in with you soon. Thank you.
Allison, always my pleasure.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, t-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.